Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Joshua Briscoe! You are grounded. I'm your mother.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Professional sports are being played in America. We're going to talk about that at some point with Ali Trost, who joins us now. Here's the thing. That's kind of a lie because we're going to talk about Mahomes stuff before because this is America and we know where our priorities lie. And right now our priorities lie with talking about Patrick Mahomes being locked up for 10 years and $500 million. But I will ask first, Ali, how did you enjoy just having live American sports on your television tonight?
Josh, it was incredible. I kicked things off by making a strawberry milkshake that was way too big, and I got like so tired like right off the bat, but then I napped back into it. The first half of the game, and again, we'll get into more of the actual MLS is back tournament, most creative name in the return of sports.
Yeah, it's great.
We'll get more into that. The first half, very underwhelming. Second half, things definitely picked up. But it was great. Live tweeting a sport, an American sport, too. I'm not as big of an EPL fan as most are here in America who, you know, watch a lot of soccer. Bundesliga was good, too. But Major League Soccer, that's, you know, it's close to home. It's a league that we cover, and Kansas City has a team that plays in it. So a little bit more of a rooted interest, but it was great.
And so was
the milkshake, by the way.
Yeah, the idea of I made a strawberry milkshake, but it was too big, so I got very sleepy and then got back into it. Your caricature of yourself continues to, like, the lines get filled in more and more every day. It's unbelievable. Your brand is incredibly strong.
I will say, little life hack for everybody who's listening in from wherever they are. If you're near a kitchen, all you need, a blender,
yes,
some strawberry Halo Top. This is my preferred, you know,
yeah,
I like this flavor. You can kind of do whatever.
Give us the recipe. Give it to us from the top here. I'm writing it down. Go ahead.
It's a lot of ingredients. All three of them. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Strawberry Halo Top, the entire thing, because it's like basically a cup. Some unsweet vanilla almond milk, and a lot of Ready Whip. Like, I probably refilled the Ready Whip. It was that big of a milkshake, I'm telling you. It was legendary, but it was great.
Is that a normal thing to use to make a milkshake?
A blender?
No, the Ready Whip. The blender, yes. I think the blender, yes.
The Ready Whip goes on after, so you only need two ingredients to get...
Okay.
To get the steak, the Ready Whip is like the gravy.
Well, that's gross. Don't put gravy on your milkshake, anybody, okay? Please don't. I mean, actually do, but then tweet me about it. I don't really care. I'm not going to drink it. So what you actually did was put ice cream and almond milk in a blender and then put whipped cream on top of it.
It was basically cereal, but like for replace the cereal with Halo Top ice cream.
You just had ice cream with whipped cream on it with a straw. You just had melted... The other thing in ice cream is more milk. Like, you just had melted ice cream.
You're not wrong.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the stand. It's just...
So if someone could help me out.
Oh my goodness.
This is how we do it in the Trost household. This is how the magic is made.
It's just melted ice cream. That's not even it's a milkshake.
I'll add that Tom is out of town, so basically like Allie Unchained. Just
yes.
Like, oh, no plans for dinner? Don't worry. I'm going to make a milkshake. We're good.
I'm going to melt ice cream and drink it. That's my me time. I'm glad you have that. I'm glad you have something that's like, yes, this is where I'm at. Wow. That's
incredible.
We're
all handling quarantining a little bit different, but
yeah, that's
no complaints.
No, that's true. And your cooking show is going to be very short, but very good.
Content lengths are getting shorter nowadays.
That's true.
Just fit the mold.
Yeah, you're.
And I just fit the mold.
You're gonna have the You're only gonna need one frame of an Instagram story to get that done. That's good. So, we have not stopped fully talking about Patrick Mahomes making $1 billion and being in Kansas City for the next decade. And I'm just curious what your thought was, what went through your head whenever you saw Schefter just go, 10 years! And then later the number comes out and it ends up being over the course of that 12-year span could be $500 million. What were you thinking as that information was coming out?
Well, first of all, just couldn't stop checking my phone and was more and more shocked as each part of this contract got leaked. It was like, oh my gosh, 10 years. And then it was like, oh my gosh, $400 million. And then it was like, oh wait, actually jump that up to $500 million or up to $500 million that he could make. But initially it was really the 10 years that stood out to me, because in all of the conversations that we had had leading up to this actual point, which have gone on for now the last, year and a half, at no point did I ever myself or hear anybody say anywhere in the ballpark of 10 years. Nowhere.
Yeah.
Everyone knew it was going to be a long time. Nobody, I think, could have guessed. And to the Chiefs' credit, not having really any details of this thing leak or any sort of inkling that they were even getting close to signing anything, that's pretty remarkable. But
yeah.
I mean, even still, the fact that 10 years was the length of contract of the, you know, of the extension that was on the table, that blew my mind. I thought at most 5 years, 6 years. No one ever thought it would be anywhere upwards of a decade.
I think
and now really it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. I think the point about it never leaking is actually really interesting, and we haven't really talked about much. And I think it also makes total sense, because when does contract information in a negotiation get leaked? It's whenever one side would like to try to move the other side a little bit in public. Like, it's not usual.
Yeah.
To my understanding, and look, I'm not like an insider. This is not the specifics of my job. But my general understanding is somebody tells Adam Schefter, hey, can you, you know, here's what they want. Here's what this guy is saying. Can you go, you know, do that what you will. And then Schefter says, you know, I'm not saying this is actually applicable to Chris Jones. I'll make it Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott won 6 years and $1 billion from the Cowboys. You can figure out where that information probably came from. With this negotiation,
right,
like along the entire conversation, they always said it was never contentious. They wanted the same thing. They wanted long-term stability for both sides. Mahomes wanted that financial stability. The Chiefs wanted organizational stability in terms of knowing their quarterback. I think that plays into that element of it. And so, I mean, the things that we see and what we heard from those guys yesterday talking about the mutual trust among the organization in the related parties, I thought was really interesting. I imagine you probably did as well.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, of all the things that stood out, it was really, first off, can we just say, it was pretty much an hour of everyone mostly reiterating the same things that they had felt about. It was like, how many different ways can we say that we trust each other,
yep,
that we all wanted this,
yep,
that it's long-term, we can win, there's security, all of those things. But no, I think the trust is a big thing. And to me, it also kind of reflects as well the trust that Mahomes has in the locker room. And we didn't get to hear as much about that. Obviously, no players talked on the call, but Sammy Watkins did an interview with SiriusXM NFL Radio talking about just how, I guess, impactful it was to hear Mahomes talk about, it's not about the money, Pat's still going, you know, and then adding on, he's still the same guy. Like, the things that Mahomes says are not a facade. It's not like for show, which I know it's sometimes in professional sports, that's not always the case. And it's almost shocking just how genuine Mahomes continues to be. Like, even when everything around him could cause him to be something different, he is still the exact same. And so that trust then trickling down within the team, like if you're on the Chiefs roster and you hear your quarterback saying, like, I want to be surrounded by talent and I want that talent to be rewarded. That was the biggest thing to me. You can say, I want talented players to play with, but it's another thing to say, I want them to get paid for their contributions. And
yeah,
openly just stating, I don't want to be the guy taking up all the money. Like, so much trust is established just in those words within a team atmosphere, because while, yeah, maybe for Mahomes it's not about the money, it's always a little bit about the money. And in other contract negotiations where maybe it does get a bit more contentious, maybe the quarterback, if we're looking at it through the lens of football, does go in with a bit more of a I got to make my money kind of attitude. That's where you might get some rift within the locker room and with teammates. So that's something else that really stood out to me.
Yeah, and especially in the next few years, like I think maybe the biggest part of that for me where that stood out in a way that's like, oh yeah, that's real, is in these first 3 years, he's not getting a raise this year. He's not getting a raise next year from his fifth-year option. Even in year three, I think his number is $31 million, and then it jumps up to the 40s and everything. He's gonna get paid, and he should. That totally right. Checks out. But there's a lot of flexibility remaining in these next 3 years, and then by year four, no one else is on the cap. It's him and Frank Clark and Harrison Butker. So do you buy in this immediate sense that maybe that Chris Jones deal, maybe that gets done actually?
Okay, I thought that up until I saw the tweet that Bill Barnwell put out about if that money will actually go towards that flexibility, that early on flexibility that they have right now, if that will actually go towards getting a deal done with Travis Kelce instead of Chris Jones. I've kind of felt all along that the best case scenario for Chris Jones and the most likely scenario, unless he holds out, is to play on the franchise tag. And I thought that honestly, even before the pandemic, I thought he'd get tagged. I thought he'd play on the tag, and that really, I think the only thing that could change within the next week is if the Chiefs are able to find a trade partner that they maybe didn't have before or earlier on in negotiations with Chris Jones and his camp. I think the reports that came out a couple of weeks ago kind of confirmed what a lot, you know, why haven't the Chiefs figured anything out? Why is it taking so long? Are they going to go up to the deadline? Well, it's not going to get figured out if they don't see him as being that valuable of a player for them. I think $16.1 million, I think that's their number. And I think that their focus is not going to be paying two of their highest paid players on the defensive line. It's making sure that Mahomes is surrounded by talent. And the best way to do that is to get the most out of Kelce in his prime. And to me, that means locking up a deal with him before you even address Chris Jones in a long-term deal.
Yeah. How do you feel about that choice then being made? If you are looking at like, all right, you know, again, no one on the planet should argue that Patrick Mahomes is the thing you lock in and then you work around that. But whenever they do show, hey, we're spending a first round pick to bring in Frank Clark, we're giving him that deal, and now Chris Jones wants that money, and that complicates things. We have to make some choices in terms of our priorities and how we value Chris Jones. Do you feel good about that valuation from the Chiefs, or do you wonder if that was the right price for Frank Clark, or if they should just pay that price for Chris Jones?
Well, it was the right price for Frank Clark because they won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He contributed in that way, and they needed him to get it done. So to me, looking back, I mean, and we can say this now looking back because they did win that Super Bowl, any move that they made ahead of that 2019 season, in my mind, was worth it because they got the ultimate prize, what everyone works for every single season and only one team gets to enjoy. So now, you know, looking forward, they're looking to run it back. Well, Chris Jones has wanted his money even before they won the Super Bowl, and now the team places a franchise tag on him. He's not very happy about it, but it's not that they're maybe undervaluing him. I mean, to place a franchise tag on him is still, like, that's a lot. And $16.1 million is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the money that he's looking for, but it's also a very unusual market right now. It's not maybe the best time to buy or sell, and that's just kind of the situation that Chris Jones finds himself in. So whether or not the Chiefs actually see him as being that valuable, and I don't mean valuable in terms of, I think they see him as a valuable piece on the football field and a valuable contributor on the defense and in the locker room and in the community, but I don't think that they see that number for that value being the same as what Chris Jones thinks it should be.
Yeah. What about Andy Reid? It feels like every couple months somebody asks him if he's going to retire anytime soon, and he goes, wait, what? Why? Why would I? That happened a little bit again in the pressers from yesterday. What did you make of his response to that question, and how long you're expecting to see Andy Reid on the sidelines with Patrick Mahomes?
First of all, I love how really the only media member that Andy ever really addresses by name. I feel like it's Herbie for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
This has just happened, I think, enough times where it's like stood out to me.
Yes.
But I think he'll coach as long as he is physically and mentally able to coach. I mean, as long as he doesn't have some sort of, you know, horrible health issue pop up, he's going to keep coaching. Mm-hmm. Like, he's someone who I would even see, like, if he ended up in a wheelchair, God forbid, he'd be like, well, if I can still draw up plays and coach my team, like, I'll be there. And I thought that was really big, probably one of the biggest, like, news bits to come out of the press conference, because we already knew what the news was. It was just kind of getting the thoughts and reactions. But the biggest news being that Mahomes consulted Coach Reed before he signed, like, hey, mm-hmm. you're going to be here with me, right? Like, that was huge. And for Coach Reed to be like, yeah, I'm 62, I'm going to coach as long as I can, I mean, I think we'll see him at least, if not for 10 years, just shy of it.
I think that's totally reasonable. I think that the people who continue to try to put him in retirement, the one other thing you mentioned, just like mentally, this is what he's been working for. Like, this is the best it's been for Andy Reid, because he finally has the quarterback and the entire offense that can pull off all the crazy things that he's been drawing on napkins and then throwing into a trash can as he remembers that his quarterback is Kevin Cobb. Like, this is what
he's having. Josh, this is his J.K. Rowling moment, when like the Harry Potter books came to like the mainstream
and got popular. I don't know if you're on Twitter. Let's not say Andy Reid's having a J.K. Rowling's moment. I think this is a bad time for that. I don't know if you've been on Twitter much in the last month, but I think this is a bad time to invoke J.K. Rowling as Andy Reid.
Did I miss something?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
I can't keep up. Okay, screw it. Scrap that. Not J.K. Rowling. This is the new series. This is not Harry Potter. I'll think of a better name. For it.
I'm sorry for derailing your analogy, but I just figured better to throw myself in front of a train before it really got to full speed.
God. Okay, go on.
The problem was your analogy.
Harry Potter
books. No.
I'm agreeing with you. I was agreeing with you in that, yes, like, Andy Reid right now has reached the peak of his career. He just won his first Super Bowl. This is somebody who has so many plays yet to call and so many just things I feel like he wants to do with Mahomes in this offense. Like, it almost feels like, I mean, age and everything else aside, like, he's just getting started. Like, this is the peak of his career.
Yes, 100% agreed. 100%. I think there was stuff, and obviously I'm biased because I'm here and I wasn't, you know, I was aware of Andy Reid in Philadelphia, obviously, but here I'm not only watching the games every week, I'm hearing from him three times a week as well. More than that, like five, actually, if you count post game and stuff. But like the Alex Smith era had some stuff like, man, he is maximizing his options here. Now he's spent his entire career with various Nerf guns, and now he's got the one that's like gas powered. And like, did that even exist? Like, actually, no, it didn't until a few years ago. And then he traded up to draft the gas powered Nerf gun. This thing is too powerful, and now it's just trick shots everywhere. I think it's, again, I just imagine that he's having the most fun he's ever had drawing up plays and everything, because he has Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman and an offensive line that'll buy the time, and Mahomes will pull it all off. I just think it's excellent.
Also, wouldn't you be like low-key offended if somebody was like asking, like, if you kept getting asked questions about like, hey, when are you retiring? Like, I am 62 years young. Like, I just won my first Super Bowl. What are you talking about? I've never... At any time, he's never really alluded to that. I mean, the man arrives at the practice facilities at what, like 2 a.m, 3 a.m? I think he's doing just fine.
Yes, 100%. I think it's the mustache. I think because of the mustache, we forget that he's 6 years younger than Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. I think if he never had the mustache, you would just be like, oh yeah, that's a 62-year-old man, which is a totally reasonable age to be as an NFL head coach.
Absolutely.
How old is Vic Fangio? And he just got into the game. Let's find out how... He's 61! What are we doing? He just started! I mean, not coaching, but being a head coach. Anyway.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a point.
He ages
them. Yeah. But if Vic Fangio had a mustache, I think they'd all be like, so Vic, you've been here for 47 seconds. You're going to retire soon? So
you just started, but when's this gonna end?
I mean,
when's the train coming to a stop?
Let's see how the Broncos pan out over the next couple of years. We might be ahead of the curve on that one. The MLS is back tournament again. The excellent name. Like you said, it happened today. I was actually watching the game on mute, and I saw that Miami was up 1-0 because it's soccer, and then they lost the game 2-1. With a thrilling goal in extra time. I was able to absorb that while doing a live radio show and very little else. But with the tournament being back right now, we've had one team have to bow out because of COVID testing, and it looks like we might get a second one with Nashville, who is also sharing a floor with Sporting, and that doesn't feel awesome at this point. Purely on the coronavirus and what's going on in Orlando scale, can you catch everyone up to speed a little bit with kind of what we've seen there and then what the concerns would be looking down the line a little bit?
Yeah, so first I'll start with the news that we're all waiting on tonight, and that is whether or not they will withdraw.
What was that? What was that whimsical popping sound? Are you okay?
I'm fine. I like cleared my throat. Did it sound like a pop?
It did. I thought.
Not what I heard.
Honestly, yeah. I thought you were so excited about that question. You had cracked open another strawberry milkshake, and we're just getting ready to pound it between my next question.
On this night of Allie's like sleepover menu, I'm now making popcorn. The news we are waiting on tonight is whether or not Nashville will be forced to withdraw from the tournament. They have 9 positive COVID tests. Dallas had 10. I would imagine the answer to that is yes. As for the concern level, especially with Nashville sharing a floor with Sporting, I talked with Carter Augustine about this, who is down there. He's Sporting's team reporter. And he said that while they're on the same floor, there is like a huge partition between, like, separating the two. So it's like two wings that just so happen to be on the same floor, but not really in any way connected. So on that front, Sporting should be safe. And really, though, like, as far as the concern with the coronavirus goes, this was bound to happen in the last week because so many teams were traveling down there. Mm-hmm. And really none of the cases that popped up while people were in the bubble, there's no belief that those were contracted while in the bubble. They were the virus was contracted before the team or the individual traveled. And then the unfortunate thing was that they tested positive in the bubble since then, though. And it really is kind of huge that it's only been within two teams, and it was really an outbreak just within those teams, and that there isn't a spread throughout the entire league where you have 2 cases here, 3 cases here, because that's when it gets tricky with the scheduling and what games can be played or postponed or canceled. So from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of optimism down there. There's trepidation, there's some anxiety, but for the most part, players feel like they are safe and in good hands, and as the testing continues, especially after this first round of games, I think that will give us a better, I guess, kind of look at what the risk really is. Because if there's no positive test after the first round of testing, especially after, like I said, this first round of games go, well, then that means that the bubble's working and players who travel down and remain negative in their testing, that means that they follow the protocols and everyone is safe to compete against one another.
This is asking you to like project into the future, which I know is the specifics of this are impossible, but you're more informed than I am, so I'm going to ask you to try, I guess. What if this happens in the middle of the MLS regular season? Like if you have two teams that have have an outbreak just in their organizations, does that team forfeit? Do they run out players that have not tested positive, even though we know that there is some margin for error in those tests? Like, do you have any feel for how this would be handled in a different, more sort of quote-unquote typical circumstance?
That's a good question, because I think that's something that Major League Soccer is kind of up against when the tournament's over in early August, because their plan is to restart the regular season with travel as they would compete, and it's, a more typical regular season, kind of like what baseball's going to do. And to answer your question on that and what they would do, would a team forfeit? I think it will depend on how many outbreaks they have. Mm. So if it stays, let's say in a perfect world, it stays contained and FC Dallas and Nashville are the only two teams who are missing out on their three group stage game results. Well, when the regular season does start back up after the tournament is over, they can realistically make up those three games in, you know, a midweek game, tack them on at the end, try to squeeze them in other ways. So in reality, they could make them up, but the more outbreaks you have, the more difficult that gets. And, I mean, at the end of the tournament, each team will only have five regular season games accounted for. Like, that's nothing compared to a 36-game season. So I don't know. They're kind of flying by the seat of their pants and waiting to see what happens just every single week. I think it's really just everyone's holding their breath, making sure that everyone is staying safe, staying healthy, and having no positive tests so that they can even just get through this group stage. Forget about the knockout round. Just getting through this group stage is going to be huge.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be critical on the fact that they are kind of, like you said, flying by the seat of their pants, which, you know, is because you have to eventually play games like to try to make this happen. I'm not saying you have to on like a, you know, in a literal sense, you don't have to play sports, but they're going to try. And so if you're going to try, you got to eventually end up on a field. It seems like we will at least see in over the course of this tournament, what issues we need to be prepared for just across the board, which is, I mean, like for all of sports. And it just, I don't know. I'm not, and this is also partially the, you know, no Ivy League sports and Stanford closing a bunch of programs and a lot of football, college football programs shutting down voluntary workouts. It just seems like there's a lot of not great kind of all happening all at once. This is probably also more procedural than it needs to be. But can you lay out what your understanding is in terms of how seriously teams are taking the tournament and then what the implications of it will be once the regular season gets started in the traditional format as well?
I love that you asked this because I almost forgot to bring up this point. And first off, teams are taking the first three games very seriously because these are the only games that actually count towards the regular season. When it gets into the knockout round, which if you are the team in the final, or, you know, you win the whole thing, you are in Orlando for another 3 weeks. So at the end, and that doesn't even count. Sure, you can win a berth for the CONCACAF Champions League. There are some, you know, monetary incentives and other things. But I talked with a play-by-play announcer with one of the other teams, and he kind of posed this question or had this thought. Will teams put more of a value on getting that CONCACAF Champions League berth, which would include a lot of international travel at the start of 2021 in a very uncertain climate with the coronavirus and whatever, you know, financial pool they're able to tap into? Will they put more value on that or more value on getting to go home 3 weeks early, perhaps with 2 to 3 wins under their belt for their regular season games?
Yeah.
Not saying that teams won't take the knockout round seriously. I just don't think teams will be maybe super disappointed if they were to get knocked out after winning out of their group, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because those are the games that matter, and then they get to go home early and just keep training at home with their families, at their home facilities. And I know that, you know, these are professional athletes, they're competitors. If you're in a competition, why not go out and win it? It's just such an unusual time, though, right now, that it almost seems like I would totally understand if people put more value on that versus making it all the way to the knockout.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Specifically to Sporting, we saw them play two games 94 years ago, and it was great. Like, they had 7 goals over their two games. It was a blast. Pulido looked excellent. Like, it was a lot of fun, and then everything obviously got put on ice for a very long time. What's fair to expect of Sporting whenever they do take the field again?
Expectations can be really high. The biggest advantage that Sporting has going into this, you know, group stage and, you know, in this tournament is that they are incredibly healthy. They only traveled without 2 of their players, both who had persisting injuries and both who didn't play any minutes at all this season so far. So all the players that they have down in Orlando on the roster available to play are players who have been available this entire time, are healthy, are fit. I mean, as you know, and early on in this whole thing, Vermees was like at the forefront of making sure that not only sporting, but Major League Soccer as a whole was moving forward and pushing towards, hey, how can we put together better individual workouts? How can we get closer to group training? How can we do all of these things in a safe way? I'll come up with a plan for that. But that was important to him to be pushing towards those things because he knew it would be to the benefit of his players. And to his credit, it allowed him to get his team to a point where they're going to be probably in better shape than most teams. They have great chemistry. Everyone, like I said, is healthy. They've had the best. I mean, I can't compare exactly to other teams, but probably one of the best training, you know, I guess, I don't even know if you want to call it a training camp or a preseason training over the last 4 months, because that's
right.
Such a long time, but they've probably had one of the best put together training regimens of any team. So I would imagine that they'd go into this thing with a huge advantage over teams like Minnesota, Real Salt Lake and Colorado, who they play in their group stage game. Minnesota is missing Aiko Parra, which is a huge loss for them. He used to be with Sporting Kansas City a couple years back, won back-to-back Defender of the Year award, is a huge part of Minnesota's team, and so his absence will definitely be a big loss for them. But again, just kind of gives Sporting's attack, like you said, 7 goals in 2 games, gives them a huge opportunity, I think, to really open things up. And as we saw tonight, like a 2-1 game was probably a higher score than I even thought would happen in the first game back in this tournament. But I think the tournament style and the fatigue will actually open the game up a bit more and kind of allow for more of those goal-scoring moments, especially late in the game when players are fatigued and really tired, which is what we saw happen with Miami. Sporting would be in a great position, I would imagine, to kind of capitalize on those moments as well.
And this is obviously based off of an incredibly small sample size of 2 games that, again, happened in 1997.
Right. Before Tiger King came out.
Oh, wow, you're right. Oh, my God. What was life like back then? But it does seem, again, tiny, tiny sample size. It does seem like Sporting, especially if they're coming back and fully match fit. I know things. They are playing a more aggressive attacking style than we have seen them play in recent years. Is that fair?
Well, they've always been a bit, I mean, they've always been defense first, and that starts with the players up top, but they've always sent their, you know, wing backs forward up the flanks. Graham Zusi always making runs, getting crosses off. But I'm interested, again, just 2 games, so not a big sample size, but Alan Pulido in the number 9 center forward role, and then Gadi Kinda also on the field, filling in for Felipe Gutierrez, who's out, who was a huge part of Sporting's last couple of seasons. But Gadi Kinda also had a great performance and great showing in those first 2 games, and both of them just kind of brought a new dynamic look to the attack. And I think what's going to be interesting, too, is Kyrie Shelton, who had been with Sporting, is back now, who traditionally plays in that number 9 central forward role. They have him out on the wings now, which was kind of an interesting look from Vermees, but has worked really well in the last couple of games. He's super physical. He kind of adds that physicality and really takes away from defenders being all over Alan Pulido because he demands so much attention just for how physical and athletic he is. But it's going to be really interesting to see more of Pulido and more of Gadi Kinda because they looked great in those first 2 games. The scoreboard showed for it at the end. And so I'm interested to see more of how their attack works more up the middle than even out on the wings in these upcoming games.
Last question for you, Allie. This goes back to something that Rudy and I were discussing before the show, and I'm hoping you can solve this for me. Can you please say the name of the American superstar who plays for Chelsea?
Christian Pulisic.
Okay, now, one more time, last name specifically is pronounced
Pulisic.
I want to make it Pulisic so bad, and I need to put the emphasis on the second syllable, correct?
Pulisic. Yeah,
Pulisic.
It's not like it's like as if you were saying pull, but like not putting as much into like the old, like pull, like Pulisic. It honestly would actually maybe work better if you visualized it as P-I-L-I-S-I-C.
Oh, it's Pulisic now. That's worse. I think I've made it worse.
No, but like it's a U, but like less of a U and more of like a, you know, the U it, words or it, it's like the.
It's got an umlaut over like, it. It needs to have an umlaut.
Yes.
Over the U.
Oh, my gosh, you just brought me back to like my phonics class or whatever, the phonetic. What do they call that? Like that lesson in where you would like draw the little things over the letters. I don't know.
I mean, it's the most vague sentence anyone's ever said in human history. What's that class where you draw the things over the letter? Phonics, I think, was the closest that I got. Ink.
I think it was phonics. I don't know.
Grammar? I don't know.
I need to go do some phonics, I guess. But
no.
Yeah, it was where you drew like the line over the letters that were like the U and not the and then the. Okay. I'm going to stop while I'm behind.
And then the sick, and that's his name. And that's the name of Christian.
I'll send you a YouTube like, tutorial link or like an online lesson later tonight once I find it.
I'll take that. I would appreciate that. Yeah, if I could just get a full explanation of where I should see invisible umlauts, I would really appreciate that. Allie, thank you for making the time. Thank you for putting down your strawberry milkshake, which is just ice cream, for a little while to chat with us. And please do continue to just document whatever your three ingredient cooking misadventures are. Please put those on your Instagram story for the entire world to enjoy.
Should I start a podcast?
No.
Do I have enough content?
No one, listen, I know this is harsh. Nobody should start a podcast. We're done. Podcasts are full. Whenever somebody quits a podcast, then you can take that spot. But we are at max capacity in the podcast parking garage.
I agree. It's like a one and one out. I swear to God, I just saw a girl today that I knew from high school. Like, okay, follow my new Instagram page for my podcast. I'm like, no. No. I don't have enough time. I can only listen to so much in a day. And the quitties, like, knocking on my door, too. I'm like, who are you? Get out of here. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough, like, oh, I can't do it.
Listen, if Quibi is knocking at your door, just hand him like a bottle of water and tell him to get on with it. Because like they are crawling to your door right now. And that's, I don't know why, but I find that hilarious.
I read such a good article just about like the entire plan behind it and how it just completely crumbled. Very interesting. And I still don't know what it is.
That's the thing, is everyone has read that article, which took longer than a Quibi to read, and no one is watching Quibi. And I am absolutely fascinated by that. There was a stat I saw on Twitter today that 90% of people who had Quibi free trials canceled after their free trial, which seems bad.
Add me to that list, because, yeah, I did download it, and then I was like, wait, what is this? I felt like I literally felt, like, dated by it. I was like, what? I don't get it. Like, and then I was like, I'll just delete it.
But this is the thing, you saw this in the story, then this was created by just like two old white guys. So this isn't like TikTok that I feel aged by, because I'm still not on TikTok and I feel like that's going to be the hill I die on. Quibi is gone. Quibi was gone before it was here.
Okay, I love TikTok, one. And two, the best
you
part
would.
Of the article was like the founder, who I know, I really would, but the best part is the founder said something along the lines of like, someone was pitching a show to him, and he literally was like, oh, you could be like a Jane Fonda and do workout videos on Quibi. So, like,
yeah.
That was, like, the creative, like,
yeah, Gal Gadot.
Idea.
Gal Gadot went to Quibi, and she was like, hey, could we amplify some, like, female voices and do something creative here? And he was like, yeah, what if you do Jane Fonda's workouts, but in 2020 on the phone? And at that point, I imagine Gal Gadot just left, or should have. She was like, all right, cool. This was a waste of my time. Thank you.
And that's where the creative meeting ended, and everyone. That's where Quibi will fall. That's how it'll be remembered, at least in my mind. So.
Yeah. Same. Absolutely. Thank you for spending at least three Quibis with us tonight, Allie. I appreciate it.
Oh God. I'll see you guys next time. It's time for bed.
Yeah, go have some more ice cream. Allie Trost of this very radio station. You can follow her on Twitter at Allie Trost. Send her your favorite Quibi recommendations, but none of us are watching it. Neither are you. It's totally fine.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Chad Henne? No, he's not in this game, but Chad Pennywise is.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You would like to play with Matt Moore? Can't help you. Can Splat Gore do anything for you?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I got to admit, the discovery of Retro Bowl has really pushed me away from the Mutant Football League. That's where those names came from in that liner. Mutant Football League is on Switch, and it was nice to have like a football game that I could just sort of casually pick up and play for a little while. But Retro Bowl is so good. It's so good at making you feel like you're doing something, when in reality, like, you are. I end up in autopilot. I usually end up having to put my phone on Do Not Disturb so notifications don't pop up while I'm playing. But I was playing earlier today, sitting in the DMV, because I had it. I didn't have my Switch in my backpack. I had my phone in my pocket and Retro Bowl on it. And at one point, I knew the route that my guy was running, and I had started the play. And notification dropped down. I was like, oh, it was like a deep post route that my top of my screen receiver was running. And the notification dropped down. I was like, I think I got this. I think I'm going to no-scope this and release it. And boom, huge completion. Notification covering half the screen. Didn't matter. I know where my guys are at. It was my no-look pass. I knew where the defense was going. I knew where my guy was going. I couldn't see it. Didn't matter. Zing. What's that? Nice 30-yard gain.
You deserve $500 million right now, I would say.
if I could get paid to play Retro Bowl, I mean, it would be that. I think that's my true calling. Not video games, specifically Retro Bowl.
Retro Bowl.
Do you know what year you're in Retro Bowl?
I mean, I'm still like in year like 4 or 5. I haven't played it nearly as much as you. I did, though.
You're in year 4 or 5.
I did, though, leave after winning 2 titles with the Giants. I have left to take over the Kansas City Chiefs.
Ah, well, the Kansas City no names. And that's not because it's the Chiefs.
Well,
it's because of licensing.
Kansas City.
You're taking over red and gold and white Kansas City team.
Taking over that professional football team in Kansas City.
I don't know if I've told you.
After winning multiple titles with that team in New York.
With the blue New York team.
The blue one.
Oh, I believe they're the New York G. Because there's also the New York J, I think.
They are the New York G, yeah.
Do you want to guess what year I'm in? You're in year 4 or 5.
16.
19. And I'm almost done with it. I am currently, here's the thing.
It's really easy to get through a season.
Like, oh, yeah.
You can get through a full season. Like, when I do play, I get through, I would say, 75% of a season. So, like, you can.
In a sitting,
yeah. So, I just typically, I guess, I have other games I play on my phone that still like have precedent.
I canceled Apple Arcade. I don't have any other mobile games.
And so part of it too is with me with Retro Bowl. I know when I start playing, like then it partly depends on where I'm at. If I'm at work, this isn't the case. But especially if I'm at home, 2 hours are just gone.
That's
like,
fair.
Like that. That's like that fair. Is one thing where it's just like when I do sit down and play, it's just like my focus is just like in on it.
Yeah. No, for me, like, you know, some like there are a lot of like meditation apps and stuff like that. For me, my meditation app is an old episode of My Brother and Me, just like episode like 274. And I'm probably on one. I think I'm in the 250s right now. I didn't even start from here. I'm just grabbing mid-era episodes of My Brother and Me and Retro Bowl. And I just sit in my big comfy chair in the corner of the living room and just do that for like an hour. And then I'm either ready to go to bed or to like do some laundry on the weekend or whatever. It's the thing that allows for just to let a little air out of the balloon. Because the balloon is too full all the time, and it's floating over a patch of cacti.
Wouldn't you want more air than in it then? You don't want it. You don't want to lay it on a cacti.
Here's the thing.
Is actually above you.
That's right. It's like Flappy Bird.
This is the upside down.
No, okay, that's a great point. Let me rethink the analogy. The balloon is extremely full of lighter fluid, and I don't know where it is now. I've lost the plot on this one. It's the balloon's just full of something, and we just need to let a little air out. And this is the crazy thing, and Renee's been complaining about this, and I really should do something about it, because the thing is, the balloon and whatnot, whenever I do just sit in my, like, big plush floral chair in the corner of the living room and put in an AirPod and listen to an episode of My Brother and Me and play Retro Bowl for an hour, for that entire hour, there is just that extremely distinct sound of just it's just for an hour of the of air being let out of a balloon when you just, you know, you're just pulling the edges of it because you can't let the balloon fly away. Oh God, no, 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 get back here. But you gotta let a little bit of air out of it's not pleasant, but I can apparently add another impression to my list. I've got Steve Spagnuolo, Bill Clinton, Pennywise the Clown, and air being let out of a balloon in an intentionally annoying way.
It's painful to listen to.
I think you need, well, I mean, what else is new? Welcome to Almost Entirely Sports. It's painful to listen to. I think for SNL, you need 5 impressions. You got to be able to like do whenever you get there. I might be able to get all 5 of them like in a conversation at some point, you know, just like.
5 very topical ones,
yeah.
That would really get you on that, yeah. On SNL.
Yeah, I did not let the air out of that balloon. Whee! You know who has a balloon? Georgie! I have a balloon, Georgie! Whee! Georgie, stop it.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
It's also Rudy and I both still reeling from the fact that apparently everyone came to the same realization last night
with Joshua Briscoe,
which is that I look like a, hold on, David Harbour, Google, 45-year-old man
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
In my trip to the DMV today to get my Missouri driver's license, I did very much consider, I got the shirt of David Harbour, Stranger Things, Hopper season 3 thing. I very much considered shaving my small beard into a mustache and just putting on that shirt and just like doing the hair and everything. I really did think about it.
Should have.
And it would have only been slightly more outlandish than my actual picture, which I just look like someone who hasn't had a haircut in 19 years, which is pretty much true. Like it would have been basically the same thing. I thought about it, and I think it would have like. It wasn't like I was wearing face paint, right? You could clearly identify me later. I just, the thought of having to live with that anytime I, like, got ID'd ever again, you know? Like, I feel like what that would immediately be like, well, that can't be you. That's, hold on, David Harbour. Are you going by a fake name? What was it like being in a Marvel movie? It's like, he's 20 years older than me. Why does this keep happening? I didn't see it at first, but I looked at your ID, and now I see it. Dumb. But it's the life I have to live with at this point. Rudy just yawned to tell me there are 30 seconds left in the show. If that's not a good barometer of how things are going.
Thanks, Rudy.
It's late, man.
I only have 10 seconds left.
Thanks to Nate Taylor and Allie Trost for joining us. If you missed it, you can grab the podcast. Just search Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcast, or go to aes.show in your browser. We'll do all this again tomorrow from 8 to 11 here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Bye, Mom!